This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe, one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and on the physically distant Worldwide Wave panel tonight, I'm joined by Paul.
Good evening.
And Stefan.
Hello.
June and July are traditionally the months when Pride events take place in the Northern Hemisphere. This year, unfortunately, the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted the majority of the planned events. However, many events have been successfully held online. In the Georgian capital, Tbilisi Pride had ambitious plans for their events this year after a very violent Pride in 2019.
Tonight, as the main opponents to last year's Tbilisi Pride, the far-right Georgian movement create their own political party, we go back to the events of 2019. John Eames is a British filmmaker that documented the 2019 Pride event in Tbilisi with the documentary March for Dignity. We see the sometimes violent events in Tbilisi last year through his lens.
Plus, we talk to Giorgi Tabagari from Tbilisi Pride about the 2020 events and where LGBTIQ rights are up to right now in Georgia. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
I mean, it definitely became a different event to what I expected. It kind of derailed. You know, I was expecting opposition at every point, but I don't think I was expecting it to be quite as extreme as it was. You know, I don't think there was going to be things like death threats. And
receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
While same-sex sexual activity is legal in Georgia, the recognition of LGBTIQ rights by the general public has been very challenging. The church and far-right political activists have been extremely vocal against LGBTI rights, sometimes even calling for violence or holding violent protests during Pride or other related queer events. John Eames is a British filmmaker, and he documented the 2019 Pride event in Tbilisi in his documentary March for Dignity. It is currently being shown in online film festivals worldwide. We asked John about why he wanted to document the struggles of Tbilisi Pride.
I'm a documentary filmmaker based in London, and this particular film is my first feature doc. I've been looking to try and find a subject to kind of, get my feet wet with a feature length, and this came along, and so it's my first feature length film.
So the first feature length is March for Dignity.
Yeah.
And so it's a documentary looking at the event following Pride in Tbilisi last year. Can you just tell us a little bit more about how you went about doing it and what's in the documentary?
I was keeping up to date with Prides around the world, especially these kind of new ones or these really sort of challenging ones, and had it in the back of my mind as a potential subject. So I was kind of keeping up with those things. Read about Tbilisi Pride in February last year, I think, when they announced. And then just reading everything else about what's going on in Tbilisi, as far as the queer community was concerned, and also the kind of history of the violence and the opposition that they were likely to face. It just kind of all came together as it seemed like a good idea. So I chatted with Giorgi initially, explained who I was, asked if he'd be interested in me coming to make a film. They agreed. And so I went out there about a month later and started the project, kind of meeting everybody and getting to know the city from there.
So as an outsider from Georgia, what did you think of the whole Pride and what's happened during Pride in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely became a different event to what I expected. It kind of derailed. You know, I was expecting opposition at every point, but I don't think I was expecting it to be quite as extreme as it was. You know, I don't think there was going to be things like death threats. And also, whilst we were there, coincidentally, some anti-Russia protests started at the time, which kind of forced Pride to reevaluate whether it was the right moment to host their event initially. Because obviously, more being in a more pro-Western direction and anti-Russia sentiment aligns very much with what Tbilisi Pride was about anyway. Yeah, it became a bigger issue. So that was very interesting to all of a sudden be, you know, filming huge protests every evening rather than violent protests on the first couple of nights as well, rather than focusing on the Pride. And yeah, it was really interesting. It was the first time I'd spent time with far-right people and quite interesting kind of spending time with them. You know, they're very welcoming and very nice.
So you got to interview far-right people?
Yeah, some I reached out to beforehand and then some I just came to meet during, as I kind of met more and more of them. So yeah, that was definitely quite interesting, especially because I'm kind of bouncing back and forth between spending time with Pride organisers and then kind of going a little bit more undercover almost with them, you know. So yeah, it was a very interesting experience from that point of view. It's the first time I've interviewed people who kind of aren't on board with what I'm doing necessarily and, you know, aren't necessarily supportive of, you know, don't have similar ideas to myself, you know. It's quite interesting navigating that.
So were they still happy to talk to you about their opinion of Pride? And
yeah, they loved it. I think no publicity is bad publicity for them, you know. Yeah, they knew that I was supportive of Pride and they knew I came from London where, you know, by and large, we have pretty different opinions to conservative people in Tbilisi. But no, they were very welcoming, which may have been, you know, a bit of a strategy on their part almost, but I don't know. You know, I think they were just happy to talk to anyone really. I think if you genuinely, sincerely believe what you're espousing, then why wouldn't you be happy to talk to people about it, you know?
And what, you know, in their, were they very vocal against about their sentiment towards the LGBTIQ community or how?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of them are a little bit more kind of polished and will try and present themselves as supportive, but just disagree morally, you know. Others, you know, but it can't, you know, there's little things that they say that kind of reveals the extremes of what they think, you know, conflating Pride events with paedophilia and, you know, little things like that, that they're kind of quite quite strongly opinionated about, really kind of reveal just what you're up against, I guess, there. You know, I think we're fortunate in most Western countries, we still have a lot of homophobia to tackle, but we're kind of past a lot of points, you know, and we can kind of have a more nuanced conversation about certain issues. You know, the fights are getting a little bit smaller, whereas it's very basic stuff in Tbilisi at times.
From London, John Eames, writer and producer of the documentary March for Dignity, with us on Joy 94.9. The anti-Russian protests, I didn't actually realise that. When we first spoke about this last year, I didn't realise there was this there seems to be quite an underlying discourse in Tbilisi with, you know, the anti-Russian-based sentiments.
Georgia generally is trying to move more towards the EU. Like they're looking at EU membership and also NATO membership, which is not what their previous colleagues or their Soviet counterparts would like to see happen, surprisingly enough. And there were Georgia was it 2009 invaded by Russia? Well, invaded or they were peacekeepers, depends on which side.
Acquired, perhaps.
No, they didn't acquire. They came in to support separatists.
there was one bit there which I thought was a little bit chilling. He said the far right people were very welcoming and very nice.
But I think that's quite usual, and it's part of the MO with regard to the press and all this thing. I know, you know, unless you, I remember seeing a really good documentary years ago on somebody that went undercover, and that was really ghastly what was filmed. But when the general media speak to them, it's always very friendly, and it's always in the benefit of the people, and able to articulate quite well a lot of these movements. And I think it's kind of, and you can see why it has this appeal to some people, I think, because they don't portray themselves as these really radical people that are going to be violent. It's just, yeah, we do what's right for you. And
you're not going to encourage more people to join by not being welcoming to new people to come forward to you.
He did sort of say, though, that, you know, the extremes do come out the more you talk to them. And, you know, I remember when we interviewed Gays for Trump, same sort of thing, very nice at first. And the more they talked, the more you thought, well, this is quite dangerous. Must have been a bit of a challenge for John himself, though, for him to physically acknowledge that his expectations of them were, you know, quite shattered, and then had to sort of reset and play the filmmaker and, you know, make sure that he asked the right questions and delved a bit further than the, you know, behind that veneer.
I was surprised, it's actually getting back to your point, Matt, about even though they knew his point of view, they were still very supportive and charming to him. Is not what I would have expected.
No, but it was the media. So, you know, so because I think at some point he said, or maybe it's not in there, but he said, I was there as media, and people behaved very differently with him than they behaved with the people from Tbilisi Pride.
Maybe it goes back to that old thing about any publicity is good publicity.
It is. That's also a challenge, though, for the local LGBTIQ community. I mean, how do you, if your opponents are being portrayed as something that is, you know, quite reasonable and, you know, lovely people, then how do you counter that? How do you show them for what they are?
I think they're still violent in the protest, though. I think when you see that, they appear friendly when you interview them, but when you see them in action in protest against Pride, for example, there it is quite violent, and I think there's a lot of things that are not shown.
It's also the one of the good things about social media is that, you know, every phone's a camera, and, you know, if you take the Black Lives Matter movement, it was, you know, projected to a worldwide stage because people pulled out their photos, pulled out their cameras and videoed what was happening. So I guess to a certain extent, everybody is, a photojournalist or a videographer these days.
I thought what was more shocking to me was he's implied, or he said straight out, that some of the far-right people were actually supportive of the LGBTIQ people individually, like they're nice people to know, but they were also calling them paedophiles as well at the same time.
Love the sinner, not the sinners, the church used to say. Coming up, in fact, we find out what the church did in Tbilisi Pride and why it is really important to document these types of events. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Hey there, beautiful people. My name is Ian Field-Stewart. I use they, them, she, her pronouns. I'm the founder of the Okra Project, and I'm speaking to you on the World Wide Wave Australia, Joy 949.
Even though we are currently broadcasting outside of the studios, you can still message us via Facebook. It's World Wide Wave, or W3 Joy on Facebook.
Tonight we are in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia to give you an insight into the violent protests surrounding Tbilisi Pride last year. John Ames is a filmmaker and director of the documentary March for Dignity. We asked John what he saw of the role of the Georgian Orthodox Church in the violence at Tbilisi Pride last year.
Yeah, I couldn't get anybody from the church to actually speak with me. I tried quite hard, but it wasn't a possibility in the end. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think in years gone by, it was more the church that were peddling the homophobia and bringing people out. And I'm sure that still was the case, but I think it was more the actions of these pro-Russia groups you know, who kind of have decent social media presences. And I think it was more those groups that were really organized against the Pride. I'm sure they used religion as, you know, something that needed to be preserved and defended, and to do it in the name of religion, but I'm not so sure how sincere that is. So I didn't really get the sense of the church's physical presence. They did make announcements, which I'm sure were very dangerous. You know, I'm probably not the best person. I probably don't have the sort of, you know, depth of experiences with just how significant a threat from the church kind of manifests itself. But there was very little physical presence from the church. So I guess I didn't get the sense that it was the actions of the church, although they did condone violence and threats. You know, they were okay with that and publicly stated so.
And you also mentioned death threats. How did these come about?
I don't know. It's mentioned, well, it's covered in the film, but it's all quite, there were mysterious text messages from, you know, from numbers with no sort of trail to them. I don't think we really ever got to the bottom of who sent those messages. It could have been far-right groups, but these phone numbers weren't publicly available, so they must have been leaked from someone in the government, perhaps. You know, it's really interesting trying to get to the bottom of that, but they were very serious threats, and they came to 3 or 4 of the organizers within the space of an hour, right in the middle, I think the day of the first event, the theater performance. It coincided with around about an hour or two later. The secret location of Pride's offices were compromised, and protests formed outside the building. Fortunately, nobody was inside. But it's quite interesting how that information became public. I'm careful not to kind of step into conspiracy theories myself. You know, I think that's better for other people to say. But very mysterious and scary. Yeah, I know it terrified them. I know they had a sleepless night of just kind of everything happening all at once, and, you know, reporting this to the police at 4 a.m. by the time they'd kind of, you know, gathered all their thoughts and managed to do everything else that they needed to do to ensure that the theatre performance went ahead safely. So yeah, definitely, I guess it was definitely effective in complicating the work that they had to do, but didn't deter them from carrying on.
Why do you think it's important to document these kind of events, Pride events like this, and especially in countries where we're struggling with LGBTIQ rights?
I think there's a hell of a lot of countries, maybe I don't even know much about, that don't get much attention because they're seen as places, you know, there's no specific laws against LGBTI people, there's no death penalty or imprisonment. You know, you hear a lot about a lot of countries where that is the case. So I think quite a lot of, like, you know, what's going on in Poland at the moment probably doesn't get enough coverage. And so, you know, I think it's important to not forget a lot of those places where there's still quite a lot of discrimination and violence. And it's just nice to sort of shed some light on that. And that's kind of what I wanted to be able to do. And also, I think the spirit of what Pride is about is somewhat lost on some people, both in and outside of the community. I think it's nice to kind of go back to a grassroots movement and remember exactly what it is, and that it's a protest still, and very much so, and that, you know, there wasn't anything specifically celebratory about Tbilisi Pride's objectives, you know? So I think we can kind of casually go along to London Pride and Melbourne Pride, I'm sure it's similar. We'll have a great time. But it's nice to hold on to the more important message that sometimes gets a little bit lost in the big corporate prides that we see.
And So where can we see your documentary and how's it been received? I think I've seen it's up for an award in Brighton.
Yeah, it's a finalist there. I think it's in about eight or nine festivals now. I'd have to top them up. But obviously we finished in about early March, and just as festivals were about to start holding their events and notifying people of selections, obviously everything kind of cancelled. So yeah, it's been going pretty well as far as we're in quite a lot of festivals, but they're mostly going online, which is slightly disappointing. Maybe that means it can reach a bigger audience with each screening, but at the same time, it's hard to replace the sort of, feeling of seeing a film in person in a theatre and the shared experience of that for people. So that's been slightly disappointing, but it's hard to gauge right now because a lot of festivals are just trying to figure out how to hold their event. And so I think they're just delaying and delaying notifying people about selections. But yeah, it's going to screen in a festival in Mumbai, the Kashish Queer Film Festival, and that's late July. I think the date's the 23rd to the 30th. I'm not sure of the screening date yet. Vancouver Queer Film Festival, festival in Philadelphia, festival in New York, Tel Aviv LGBT Film Festival. So yeah, there's lots. First up is July. I'm not sure if you have to be in India to watch the film. I'm not sure how all these online festivals are working just yet. So yeah, it's in festivals in all around the world starting from now, and hopefully some can go ahead in person, but if not, online we'll have to do for this year.
From London, that was John Eames, director of the documentary March for Dignity, about the violence at Tbilisi Pride. You're on Joy 94.9. The role of the church in this, they weren't visible, they weren't there, they have full deniability, but it is quite obvious that they made announcements, they allowed announcements of threats and violence.
Do you think not being visible, they can dissociate themselves from that and say, well, actually, we didn't partake in the violence, so therefore the church has got no responsibility, even though there were some calls to violence? I mean, is that the strategy? I'm not sure.
I think they'll give it a go.
But I'm not sure why they would not be there and protest, or they want to be seen alongside the far-right people. I don't know. I mean, it's just...
I'm guessing it's actually more about that thing of not being seen on video, on camera. It's, not being seen as too radical.
They probably don't want to get their hands dirty, if you're putting it bluntly. But they want to encourage the atmosphere of threats and violence because it plays into their rhetoric about how bad LGBT people are, we're all going to go to hell.
Now, there were death threats there, but, pleasingly, nothing happened more than threats. It didn't deter the organisers from carrying on, which is a good thing. But really concerning that the numbers, which weren't published anywhere, were, they were leaked. Somebody gave them to these people who made the threats.
I do wonder if that means it came from someone in authority, or does that mean it came from someone actually inside the organisation of Tbilisi Pride?
I would assume in applying to run events and a march and whatever else, you would have to make certain applications to government. So I guess there's another avenue there if somebody really isn't on your side. He did certainly say that this was really taking Pride back to its roots, which is very much rooted in protest, and that, as Westerners with, our rights and our prides are much more party-like, that, sometimes we can forget what Pride is really anchored in.
Although there has been a push, even in Melbourne, to make the Pride more... go back to its origins, it's the reason for it being around.
Coming up on Joy 94.9, Giorgi Tabakari from Tbilisi Pride gives us an update on their Pride this year and events in Georgia in these COVID times. This is World Wide Wave.
This is Samuel from Kenya on World Wide Wave.
This is the show that takes you around the globe, one queer story at a time, World Wide Wave. And tonight we're in Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia and the site of violent Pride event last year. A special hello to everybody listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcast automatically, either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or on iTunes, Spotify, or any other platform you favourite. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Our second guest tonight is Giorgi Tabagari from Tbilisi Pride. After the violent event surrounding Pride in Tbilisi last year, Giorgi had big plans for 2020, and then a pandemic happened. We asked Giorgi to tell us what Tbilisi Pride did recently despite COVID-19.
Yes, you're right. Actually, we had big plans for the Pride Week. In fact, 2 weeks after the outbreak of coronavirus, we were planning to go public with the plans, what we had in mind for the Pride Week 2020. But then for obvious reasons, like everywhere else, we've noticed that the Pride got cancelled one after another in Europe. Europe Pride got cancelled. So obviously we had to call off our events as well. And we had sort of a rough first few weeks when we didn't know like how to adapt ourselves to the activities, and it took some time to actually restructure and realize that we have a new reality now and we have to continue work, whether it's online, offline, or whatever the lab, whatever the engagement it requires. We had to do something about this. So this was pretty much the process that we went through. And then there was a May 17 as well, which is the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. And it was a first big date when we had to do something online. And we came up like several things that we tried to use as an opportunity during the COVID-19 lockdown. So we created actually the rainbow face masks, which were a great success in terms of a lot of people took it. It was free as well. We also hang the rainbow flags from the balconies of like whoever wanted. We disseminated up to 100 rainbow flags, and people actually waved them from their balconies and windows. We also had an online demonstration, which was a huge success because I mean a lot of people watched it. We had national televisions who were broadcasting it on their social media platforms. So for a small country like Georgia, we actually had 120,000 viewers watching the online demonstration, which is for a population of 3.5 million, it was a huge number. And actually, we managed to somehow use the situation and turn it into an opportunity rather than an obstacle. Obviously, it cannot continue for long, but thankfully, coronavirus situation in Georgia is a bit easier than in some other countries.
So how did you organize this online demonstration? How did you get people to know that it was happening, and what was it like?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it gave us an opportunity to have more inclusive events, because a lot of people, a lot of activists are not living in Georgia. Some of them are abroad. Some of them ask for asylum. Some of them live in the region. It's not only like in the capital city, but then also you have some small or regional places as well, which actually the online event enabled us to give an access to these people, like to be participants of this event. We had like European Commissioner for Human Rights, Dunja Mijatović from the Council of Europe, participating here because of it was online. Otherwise, she would not be able to be part of the event. So actually, we had opposition political parties, we had government representative and community members as well participating in this. And it gave us a possibility to actually have a wider representation in the online event. And we have, like mostly we exist on social media and we are using our Instagram and Facebook channels quite a lot. And this is how information spreaded. Like we announced it, then we get the media coverage, and it was broadcasted by seven different media platforms at the same time. So it was actually a big success in terms of the media coverage.
It sounds like it had a lot more exposure because it was online and you were able to involve people.
Yeah. It was actually a surprise, yeah.
Last year, the Georgian March Civil Movement led a lot of the protest against Pride. They became a political party a few days ago. What impact could that have on LGBTIQ rights in Georgia?
Well, we are not very happy about them going to politics. It's like we know that they will try to capitalize on homophobia and xenophobic sentiments. And generally, this is as it's happening in a lot of European countries and globally as well, like when far-right groups are getting into power and trying to use this rhetoric to get to the political power. And this is what they are going to do. They are going to use homophobic language and promoting homophobic policies and anti-migrant policies to get the votes of conservative people. And obviously, it's a problem for us. We don't want anti-LGBT person to be represented in the parliament. And we are not happy these things are happening. But again, I mean, it's not up to us. And we hope that that the Georgian public and voters will have a proper stance, and they will say no to this this power. But even though they are not going to be very strong, I'm sure they will have very minor representation in the parliament. But even this minor representation is not really something that we want to face, because they have a potential to grow. And so it's really unpleasant, but it was expected as well, because these groups, one thing that is important to understand is that Georgia is strongly influenced by Russia, and Russia is a country which works whose agenda is like pretty much anti-LGBT, and their foreign policy is based on anti-LGBT agenda. They try to undermine West, European Union, portraying it as institutions which support gay marriages and this gender ideology. So basically, these groups, the Georgian March and also other hate groups in Georgia, are funded by Russia, and it's important that they are they represent not only just conservative political stance, but they also have political ties with Kremlin in Moscow, and they are getting direct funds from these groups.
Yogi, thank you very much for taking the time to speaking to us again at World Wide Wave.
Thanks a lot for having
me. Thank
you. It's fascinating to see how, I mean, events worldwide have had to change and change really quickly, but it really has hit Pride season. That is the peak of LGBT events in the Northern Hemisphere, and it really just collided with COVID, didn't it? So many have had to, you know, completely reshape their events or just cancel too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if any of them actually gone ahead. Didn't LA Pride, weren't they going to do a march? I don't know if that actually happened. But yeah, so basically everything's been written off in the Northern Hemisphere this year.
Or online events like Global Pride and you know, individual events to keep people engaged.
Mm. And like, I think taking it online, though, has actually, I think Georgi mentions this, that it's opened it up. So it's not just, it wasn't just Tbilisi Pride, it was Georgia Pride, because you had content from people across the country.
And from people outside the country, I think we're seeing people that might be Georgian but living outside and were able to participate, and also he was able to get some politician, European commissioner. So I think people that wouldn't have gone if it had been physical. So the reach seemed to have been better in a way.
And you've also got that that opportunity of participating in safety as well. So if you're a young queer person in a regional town, you know, you might not be out for something, but you still have the opportunity to dial in, to participate, to see what's happening, to feel part of that community, even though you are separated by distance and also, you know, very different communities.
I was intrigued by the idea of the online demonstration, because I'm not sure how that would actually work. I imagine people just standing there with placards on their phones.
You carry your iPhone down the street.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not how it happened. It was an intriguing idea.
I think what they're doing is they're getting this array of important people to make statements, make comments, and by by watching, participating, you know, you are a part of the movement that is standing behind them. That's kind of my take of it. Interesting to see it did attract a bit of local media coverage as well. So, you know, that really allows the message to be amplified that, you know, this push for rights is continuing.
But didn't he say the national broadcaster showed it? So on their social media,
that's right.
The equivalent to the ABC or SBS, I guess.
Yeah, and I seem to remember from previous talk with Georgi that it was difficult to get media coverage from the state media. So I think that's a really good thing that they were able to do that.
On the downside, though, we do actually have the far-right groups getting seats in Parliament.
Well, not yet. They created the political party, so now they need to be elected. And hopefully the public will see that and not vote for them, but it's not guaranteed when you see what's happening in countries like Hungary and Poland.
And Georgi was certainly saying that the push from Russia included funding. They're actually funding these groups to try and influence what happens in Georgia.
Yeah, just wondering if Georgia is like other previous Soviet states where they're actually... they have large populations of Russians. So you've got that divide between the people that want to move to closer ties with Europe, but then you've got the large Russian populations that naturally want to stay with Mother Russia. So you're going to have that conflict. I don't know how you resolve that. And then you've got on top of that is the anti-gay LGBT rhetoric.
That's right. What it does for LGBT rights...
You can follow Tbilisi Pride on all the socials or visit tbilisipride.ge.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the World Wide Wave.
Our thanks tonight to John Ames, from director and producer of March for Dignity, a documentary on the Pride events in Tbilisi in 2019. It's now showing at online festival worldwide, and you can find out more at www.marchfordignityfilm.com. And we also want to thank Georgi Tabagari from Tbilisi Pride for speaking to us. Georgi is a regular now on the show and always giving us great updates on what's happening in Georgia and the resilience of the LGBTIQ community there.
Absolutely. And to all those people on Facebook, Elvis, Candy, Dwayne, Leslie, Ali, and a heap more who have joined or interacted with us this past week on Facebook, it's W3 Joy.
And not forgetting behind the scenes, our podcaster Peter and social media master Dean.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.